And welcome. It's Ari Rosenbaum for another fun-filled episode of that 401k podcast. This week's topic, 401k plan sponsors should listen to this episode. Just a companion piece to my latest article, which is 401k plan sponsors should read the article, should read this article. First things first, talking about the events. This episode drops on Friday, so that means that 401k virtual bunch, it's a possibility that you downloaded this episode and listened to it before 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time start. It's a Zoom webinar meeting, Zoom meeting with Mike Webb from Kamek. We always give shout-outs. I always give shout-outs to Mike Webb on the podcast. It's always been a great supporter of mine and a great attendee of that 401k conference before the pandemic. We'll talk to him about those events. We'll talk to him about a lot of the things that have been going on in the business. You know, being the turd in the punch bowl, I'll express my opinions. We'll talk about the new fiduciary rule that seems to be coming down the pike, and as well as some other, you know, issues that we may discuss. And we may discuss, you know, cultural significant events that have been going on in the past. Or currently, you know, maybe we'll talk about Disney Plus and the Hamilton. So that's that. On Friday, August 14th, we're going to have that 401k virtual conference number 5. Working already with some of the plan providers. You know, as I say, every edition is different. We always have different presentations, so it's fun and fresh and free. And, of course, you can get it on demand if you're not able to attend live on Zoom in the webinar. You can, of course, watch it on demand. Speaking of which, the announcement made a couple days ago, that 401k National Conference for 2021, it will be moved to January, and it'll be a virtual-only event. With a heavy heart, I would say, that 401k National Conference, the inaugural edition, was in March 2020 at Walt Disney World, you know, right as the pandemic was breaking, and the plane ride back on that day, that's when, you know, the NBA suspended their season, and all these things were going on, and it's like when COVID, you know, became real in terms of a threat nationally, and here we are, 4 months later, still, you know, can't have large gatherings. I think that even if we do get a vaccine by the end of the year or early 2021, my feeling is that a lot of these national-type conferences are going to be, I wouldn't say few and far between, they're going to be lesser attended. I think that people, regardless of what is going to happen with fighting the virus, that you'll still see a lot of companies with, you know, directing their employees not to travel. So I just think moving the event to January, that was always a closed month for us in terms of having events. We tend not to have January events, so might as well move the National to January. And hopefully that allows us to have some events in February and March. December, we have planned for the event in Vegas. We may move that. We may not. I mean, it's really, you know, when you think about it, you know, December is 5 months away. But when you see localities around the country saying, you know what, you're not going to have a large gathering in our area. Of course, in Vegas, you know, our events, you know, the local events traditionally don't have more than 50 people in attendance. But still, you know, the concern is there whether we'll have it, you know, December or maybe we move it to February. We'll see how it is. I mean, you know, right now, WrestleMania 37 is supposed to take place, I think, in April 2021. And there's already talk that they may move move the event back to Tampa. Because there's been hesitancy on LA of scheduling larger events through 2021. I know that Philadelphia Eagles, I think it's been hammered home that they will not be having any fans in attendance for the year, for the football season. We'll see what happens. But that 401k virtual conference, national conference, will take place virtually, guaranteed. We're not having it anywhere else. There's no conditioned. And, you know, I see a lot of the other events going virtual as well. Just makes sense for us. We'll get, obviously, a bigger attendance. I think, you know, learning from the March event, asking people to come around the country is a daunting task, especially when you consider the other national events that are there. When you have an event that's virtual, I think we'll get a greater attendance. It also gives us the opportunity to price it differently than we would if it was at a hotel where we have, you know, guaranteed room rates and guaranteed food catering bills. So we'll have the same event 2 days, hopefully 8 hours each day in terms of content. We will have celebrities virtually. I have an idea for somebody as a celebrity, which if I would tell you now, well, I first have to talk to the celebrity. People would just be kind of surprised that that would be the type of guest that I would bring to a 401k event, but there's a reason why in terms of marketing and whatnot. So we'll see how that goes. I had lunch with my buddy Larry Davis, who books all my athlete appearances, and we already were discussing what we're going to do in terms of bringing in a guest that's more cost-effective to do that virtually than to have them travel. And what we'll do for attendees is that we'll have an early bird special. It'll probably be up within a week. I will charge advisors and TPAs who want to attend $20.21 is the early bird special. There'll be a VIP rate of $120.21 for those who want the autographs from the two celebrity guests. Not everybody wants that. So we'll have that tier. And then, of course, the early bird rate is probably going to end sometime around Thanksgiving. But it's going to be a fun event. We'll have, you know, a lot more presenters. The sponsorship levels are just going to be, obviously, when you're not at a hotel and you don't have to meet a room requirement and, like I said, a catering bill, the sponsorships are going to be a lot less. We're going to be much more cost-effective. And, like I said, we're certainly going to get a bigger crowd than we did at the national event at Disney World. So always go to that 401ksite.com for further information about all these events. Now back to the topic at hand. 401k plan sponsors, and why they should really listen to this episode. You know, I know plan sponsors are busy. You know, being an employer is obviously hard work. You know, of course, that running joke that I have, the reason that I don't have employees is because I was an employee once, too. So, you know, being an employer, you know, you got a job to do. That job is to make money, to keep your employees continually employed. You know, and there's so much headache, taxes, licensing, insurance, rent, everything else under the sun. And, you know, obviously plan sponsors really don't have the time to devote to something like reviewing their plan. But, you know, the problem is that as plan fiduciaries, you really have no choice. You know, the meaning of being a plan fiduciary is, you know, you have the highest duty of care. You know, because you're responsible for the monies of other people. As a fiduciary, you have the highest duty of care, law and equity. You obviously have to care more for the money that you hold for other people than your own money. And, you know, obviously you have liability, potential liability as a plan sponsor or plan fiduciary. And, you know, worst comes to worst, it could be personal liability. And, you know, so, you know, when your advisor or TPA calls you as a plan sponsor, you know, you got to remember that a retirement plan should be treated as, you know, a little bit more important than, you know, the water cooler or the coffee machine or, you know, any other, you know, gym reimbursement or any other type of employee benefit, which, of course, reminds me, I worked at a place, it reminded me, there's that scene in Airplane 2 where Elaine, who's, I guess, the navigator of the Mayflower, she's trying to explain, you know, what's going on. You know, the sound that you hear on the side of the plane is, you know, the shuttle as asteroids smashing against the hull of the ship. Unfortunately, we've lost our pilot and navigator, our pilot and co-pilot, and also it means that we're hopelessly on course to hit the sun. And somebody in the plane says, "Are you telling us the whole truth?" And she says, "No, we're also out of coffee." And that's when everybody goes crazy. And so I work in a place where, you know, they treat employees not very well. So many different things. And the only time the other employees reacted negatively is after I left. They announced that they were no longer supplying milk for the Keurig machine. And that's what really set people off. So, you know, that just reminds me of the whole water cooler thing. And plane sponsors really need to treat, they really need to treat their 401k plan a little better than they would, some of these ancillary employee benefits. Another big thing that plan sponsors really don't understand, and if you are a plan sponsor, what you have to understand is that you're responsible for your plan providers. You know, being a plan fiduciary is meaning that, you know, ultimately the buck stops with you. So while you have a TPA and you have a financial advisor who are going to answer to you, and, you know, obviously any mistakes they make, they will be, they can be responsible for it, but ultimately the burden bears on you. You know, if a TPA fails to prepare your Form 5500, you're going to be the one, as the plan sponsor, get the notice from the Department of Labor and or the IRS that there's a late penalty due. Even if you hire a provider such an ERISA 338 fiduciary who's going to assume all the liability, you're still liable for hiring them. You know, listen, Jeff Ritchie, through Vantage Benefits, was a ERISA 316 administrator. Aren't the plan sponsors still responsible for hiring him, even though he did steal, you know, millions and millions of dollars from his clients? You know, you're always going to be on the hook as a plan sponsor, no matter what you do. You can always minimize your liability. You can never fully eliminate it. Can never really. There's always going to be something there. So even if you hire a 338 or 316 fiduciary and they assume the, that component of the plan, still ultimately you're on the hook. You can get sued as a plan sponsor, but that's really not the only threat. When years ago when I first started my practice, we talked about, talked about LinkedIn, articles about fiduciary responsibility and making sure that your, costs are effective and reasonable and all that kind of stuff. And we talked about litigation threats, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that small and medium-sized employers aren't going to get sued. For class action ERISA litigators, there really is no money. They want, the big boys, the Fidelities of the world, Oracle, you know, these billion-dollar 401k plans where, you know, you have plan sponsors that have big, big pockets. But ultimately, the bigger threat is through a government review. You know, for a small plan, medium-sized plan that I've represented over the years, it's that Department of Labor or IRS audit that's is the bigger threat. You're not likely to get sued by a participant. If a participant has a complaint, they will take it to the Department of Labor and the Department of Labor investigate. You know, and I've had clients, especially on the defined benefit level, where there were complaints made by plan participants or actually employees that were restricted from being covered under the defined benefit plan, because in those days, the actuary unwisely told these employers that they can restrict people from defined benefit plan participation by name instead of title. And the problem with that is the IRS and DOL doesn't think that that's a reasonable classification. So that was obviously a huge, huge, huge problem. But like I said, the penalties that a plan sponsor can get from the Department of Labor or the IRS, they're big penalties. I always talk about that client who, got sued by the DOL because the DOL assumed that this, plan sponsor was embezzling money from the defined benefit plan. Wasn't the case, but They had a TPA who didn't do their job, and that's what the impression, the assumption that the Department of Labor made. And ultimately, the plan sponsor didn't have the proof to back up their claims that they were, you know, the owners of the company were due that benefit, and so therefore they had to fork over millions of dollars. You see every now and then, you know, small plans getting sued in class action. They're very, very few and far between. And usually in those cases, the case is usually dropped because the pleadings are poorly made. The complaint is poorly made by the ERISA litigator or litigator who just happened to be involved in a ERISA case or really didn't know what they were doing. Another thing that plan sponsors need to do is they need to get a financial advisor, but get the right one. You know, the role of a financial advisor is to assist in the selection or placement investment options on the plan. You need somebody who understands the fiduciary process of the plan, you know, the nuts and bolts of an investment policy statement and, you know, the quarterly or semi-annual meetings, dealing with the IPS and making sure that the investments still fit the requirements. You also need an advisor who knows how to educate plan participants. So it's really somebody who, you know, has the experience and the knowledge. In the old days, and when I say the old days, I'm talking about, you know, 10 years ago, you had a lot more advisors who just had that single or, you know, a couple plans on the books, and they've been slowly being pushed aside. Thanks to, I think, the proliferation of ERISA 338 professionals. I think that that has steered a lot of business away from these single plan advisors. So, you know, it's really important to have not only a financial advisor, but a good one. Somebody who understands the role of plan education, someone who understands the role of ERISA 44C, that it's not a suicide pact, that the sponsor still has a duty in informing plan participants of, you know, making sound investment choices. And it's really important that, you know, plan sponsors, you know, hire an advisor who has experience and you know, a plethora of experience in dealing with retirement plans. I know a lot of advisors through some of these networking groups, and, you know, quite a few of them are just very, very honest and say, you know what, we don't really handle retirement plans. We like to, you know, deal with IRAs and private money and manage the money. We don't see that much money in 401k plans. I always joke, I said, you know, when it comes to advisory work, 401k plans, yeah, it's more bang for the buck in terms of assets under management. But when dealing with a 401k plan as opposed to an IRA or some other money that you're managing, I find that advisors work harder on 401k plans to make less money. So that's that. But another part where plan sponsors really need to understand and listen is they really need to review. I always joke about the family member who never wanted to go to a doctor for a checkup because, you know, they don't want to find out what was wrong. You know, they used to tell me, well, if I go to the doctor, that means I'm sick. That's just not wise. You know, I find from experience that most 401k plan sponsors don't want to review their plans because they don't want to know what's wrong. And the problem is that problems with the plans never go away. I always do this. I always talk about this retirement plan tune-up where I would offer plan review for $750. And how, you know, I want to say less than 10 I've done in 10 years. Because ultimately, even for $750 that they can charge against plan assets, the fact of the matter is that plan sponsors don't want to know. They don't want to be proactive. They are always reactive. And as you know, with retirement plans, when you have huge errors, if you know at the time it happens, it's less costlier to fix than a couple years down later when some of those choices on fixing are gone. And also, you know, that, you know, it's caught in a plan audit where there may be a governmental order, which may, you know, end up in a penalty. So it's really important that, you know, pay somebody like me, review your plan. It's a good way to be preventative in nipping those problems in the bud. You just really can't assume, as a plan sponsor, that your plan providers are just doing their work and are doing a competent job of it. It's just too much risk. And like I said, there's always two ways where you find these plan errors. It's usually when it's on a government audit or when there's a change of TPA. You know, I always jokingly say that's when we know, that's when the new TPA finds where the bodies are buried, as they say, or the errors that have happened. I had one client, law firm client, big trouble with them was after, you know, they changed TPAs and the new TPA realized that the top-heavy test was done incorrectly and some top-heavy contributions were owed. That's a big deal. And I think it's also important that in terms of fees, that plan sponsors focus the right way on fees. I just think that, you know, the retirement plan business has been going, fees have been getting lower and lower and lower as a percentage of assets. I think that's because of technology and obviously increased competition thanks to the fee disclosure requirements. But the problem is you have a lot of plan sponsors out there who probably still think, you know what, we can pick the cheapest provider. So, you know, they need to realize that fees just have to be reasonable. They don't have to be the lowest. As long as they're reasonable in comparison to the services that are provided, plan sponsor is going to be fine. But, you know, the only way to determine reasonableness is to go out there and shop what the competition is doing, competing plan providers, or to use a service, or even to use the ERISA averages book and whatnot. I sit and record this. I'm sitting here in my office downstairs in my house, and I was just realizing, again, over the 15 years that I've lived in this house and how many different contractors I used. I think it's like maybe five or six with different projects around the house. And there is this one contractor that we used for a lot of work. We eventually sued them. For stuff resulting from the hurricane, them walking off an existing job because we didn't want to accept their blackmail in terms of renovating our house after the hurricane, and shame on us was their cost for doing work was exorbitant. That if we had not just relied on them because we previously used them in the past and benchmark their costs against what was out there. We would, determine that they were too expensive. And in terms of the blackmail, it was something to put just, I think they called it like tier one or phase one. They were just going to put up boards around the downstairs where this office is. I have a high ranch. They weren't going to paint. They were just going to spackle. And it was just a crazy amount of money just for, you know, drywall and spackle. It was like, you know, I think it was like $15,000 to $20,000. Shame on us. But, you know, if we waste our own money, that's on us. As a plan fiduciary, you don't have that luxury. You need to determine that the fees are reasonable or not. But like I said, the biggest mistake that plan sponsors do make is misunderstanding the rule regarding plan expenses in terms of only paying reasonable fees. And again, selecting a plan provider that's only charging the cheapest cost. So I think I hit the nail on the head with this episode. So go to that401ksite.com for further information on that 401k national virtual conference January 21st to 22nd, 2021. That's a Thursday, Friday. If you're interested in sponsoring it, let me know. If you're interested in attending it, there'll be a link
up within the next couple weeks to get that early bird rate of $20.21. And of course, if you want autographs from our celebrities, I think we'll have one a day. There'll be an extra charge if you want a personalized autograph, which hopefully we could arrange it that you can get that autograph before the holidays. Be a great Hanukkah or Christmas present. So anyway, hope you guys come back next week for another fun-filled episode of the 4K Podcast. Thank you.